the record button really gets me because it's red when it's record, when I always think green is go.
Yeah.
And red is stop.
Yeah.
Yeah. Confusing. That is my biggest fear, that one day I just think green is go and we record the whole episode.
Oh, don't record that.
Yeah, I don't record the whole episode thinking that it's record because it's all bright green.
This is why I don't like technology.
I think it happens to everyone and it will happen one day on this podcast and it's absolutely fine because what more do people want than to come to the parsonage and spend time in the library with us?
Exactly.
So if they have to come and do it again,
then they'd be totally up for it.
They'd love it. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Behind the Glass, a Parsonage podcast. This is the podcast where we get up close and personal with an object in our fascinating museum collection. From writing desks to sofas, pianos to spoons, we welcome a new guest each week to bring a Bronte object to life through conversation and creative writing. We're your hosts, Sassy and Sam from the Bronte Parsonage Museum, and we're here to chat all things books, babes and Bronte with new contemporary artists from across the UK. Hello, Sam.
Hello, Sassy.
Which Bronte are you feeling like today?
I am feeling like Branwell. I've had quite a Branwell week this week. Not only has it been quite stormy, but I've actually been quite creative this week. I've been
doing
some artwork. So I am going to go with Branwell.
That's a good choice, I think.
Thank you. Yeah, How about you?
I think I'm feeling like Nero, the Merlin hawk that Emily had as a pet for a little while.
You got a broken wing.
I wasn't going to say broken wing. I was going to say I'm ready to fly.
You're ready to fly.
I'm ready for this like an adventure. I don't really like plane travel, to be honest.
No, so I've only done it once.
Maybe the bird is actually a terrible decision.
Well, like I said, he had a broken wing, so you could just be carried around everywhere.
Adventurous, but also content with staying on someone's shoulder.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, just, I don't know, adventurous to explore like Leeds and Haworth and the local area. I went to Harewood House for the first time.
I've never been. I need to go.
Yep, lovely grounds, really beautiful. Had a really nice walk. It was supposed to rain and it was sunny the whole time. That's brilliant. What I like. And shout out Meg, who works at Harewood House. She's one of my mates.
Oh, nice.
Just had a lovely time.
Yeah.
Yeah, exploring the local area.
Yeah.
And you should come up here and explore it too, listener.
Absolutely.
Yorkshire's got so much to offer.
A lot of walking, a lot of moors, a lot of museums.
Lots of museums. That's the place to be. Who have we got on our episode today, Sam?
Well, today we have Ramla Qureshi. She works front of house. Ramla is a first class history and politics grad working here at the museum. She ran a Thursday talk named An Image of Villainy, Prejudice and Othering in the Bronte Novels, which was brilliant.
It was so good. Fantastic. Yeah.
Very popular.
She's also an artist.
She is.
She's got some postcards in the shop.
Some amazing postcards in the shop.
They're brilliant. We'll talk more about those later. But yeah, can't wait to have Ramla on. And it's really nice to be able to get our staff members on as well.
Yeah, a little bit behind the scenes.
Yeah, so let's take it away.
Brilliant. Hello, Ramla. Welcome to the podcast. So we always start off by asking our guest, what Bronte do you feel like today?
Oh, what Bronte do I feel like today?
And this can be any Bronte. It can be pets. It can be aunts and uncles.
Probably Emily.
Yeah.
Just because of the weather.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why?
The weather hasn't been very nice recently, and that makes me feel like Heathcliff.
It's been pretty stormy recently.
Definitely.
I actually couldn't believe the rain yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And do you know what's crazy is how different the weather is literally down the road in Leeds?
Yeah.
I got off the train and it was bright sunny and I was like, what's going on? I feel like Haworth is its own climate.
Yeah.
It's a bit like the Addams Family, you know how they always have a cloud over their house?
Yeah.
It's kind of like that in Haworth, isn't it?
I never finished the Wednesday show. Is it good? Did you watch it?
Yeah, I liked it.
Yeah.
Well, there aren't any Bronte references, but I'm waiting for some Bronte references. There's a lot of Edgar Allan Poe references in it, but I'm waiting for some Bronte ones. So.
Do you think that Wednesday would read the Brontes?
Definitely Wuthering Heights.
Yeah.
Definitely Wuthering Heights.
That is very her vibe, isn't it?
Yeah.
Ramla, do you want to introduce yourself for listeners at home?
So Hi, I'm Ramla. I'm one of the visitor assistants at the museum.
What do you like about working here?
I like the interaction that we get with all the collection items. Mm. I think that's such a unique experience that I think a lot of front of house staff don't get.
Yeah.
I also like the tight-knit community that we have at the museum. It's really nice that everyone gets along and we all have like similar interests and we're able to talk about, you know, literature, history, politics, feminism, everything. And it's just, yeah, I really like that part of the job as well.
And we all like to have a geek out over the Brontes.
Yep.
And find out what everyone's opinions are on different things. Mm-hmm. Have a good debate. It's always good fun.
I feel like a question that gets asked by lots of visitors, do you have a favourite novel?
Yeah, I have a favourite novel, and that's The Tenant of Wildfell Hall by Anne Bronte.
You're an Anne stan.
Yeah. Team Anne.
Why? What's do you like?
I just really like how feminist it is, and I think it's really overlooked. Mm-hmm. I think that a lot of people think of Charlotte, Jane Eyre, Wuthering Heights, and Emily, but they sort of forget about Anne.
Mm.
And The Tenant of Wildfell Hall, I think her writing is so different to her sister's, and it's so modern and it's so relatable, but it's also so strikingly feminist. I think I really appreciate like her writing style and the message that she was trying to get across in that story and how sort of like rebellious it is. People don't imagine Anne Bronte to be the rebellious sister, but she is.
Yeah.
Whenever someone asks me, I'm like, The Tenant of Wildfell Hall. And they're usually shocked by how quickly I say it, because it's like, I don't even have to think about it.
Did you hear the clock chime then? I feel like that was Anne being like, yes, yep. Ramla. I think an adaptation needs to happen, like a modern one right
yeah,
now.
Definitely,
right?
Yeah.
Because I think that would bring it to the forefront of audiences' minds and visitors, and it would be really nice to see a contemporary take on it.
Yeah.
Wasn't there Sally Rainwright was going to do it at one point?
I think there were plans. For some reason, it didn't go ahead. There was one from the 90s, and I think before that there was one in the 60s.
Yeah.
But it's definitely one that could do with a more contemporary update, I think, just because, like you said, it does need bringing to the forefront
again.
Yeah, definitely. Because whenever anyone talks about the Brontes, they always immediately are thinking Jane Eyre, Wuthering Heights.
Yeah.
And they know there's the other Bronte, but they don't really know much about them.
Yeah.
So I think it is something that would actually bring Anne into the limelight again.
I think
it'd be great.
She deserves it.
She definitely does.
She does. Yeah. You're right. She does deserve it. Right. Well, we have got the object in front of us, but we aren't going to reveal it just yet. What me and Sam are going to do is bring it to life through words. Through vivid description, and we're going to see if our listeners at home can guess what object you've chosen.
I'm going to start with paper.
I didn't even think of that when I was thinking about it. I don't know why. Okay, I'm going to go pink.
Blue.
Purple.
Green.
Just going to run through the colours. I'm going to go soft.
Naturey.
Naturey.
Usually, most of the objects that we have on this... My usual description is yellow.
Like it's
quite
brown.
Nice to have something which is colourful.
Yeah,
so.
That's very true.
Oh, yeah, brown, that's it.
Precise.
Fragile. Did you say fragile?
No.
Very fragile.
Pretty.
Artistic.
Yes.
Or is that too much? Oh, does that give it away too much?
It's okay, we need to give them more
hints
now.
Okay, yeah, we do. Shall we reveal what it is?
Yeah, Ramla, do you want to reveal what the object is?
So they're the watercolour paintings painted by Charlotte.
Yes.
Ooh.
And specifically, we've gone for the flowers, haven't we?
Yeah.
So we've chosen to talk about... I literally can't say this word.
Do you want to...
The blue convolvulus? How do you say it?
Convolvulus.
The blue convolvulus. The blue convolvulus.
We'll go with that.
The blue convolvulus. The heartsease and the wild roses.
And would be a really good band name.
Wild roses.
Yeah.
Yes, Ramla. So you've brought in the watercolour flowers from Charlotte Bronte. Why did you choose this object?
I'm also an artist and a painter. And when I saw these paintings for the first time, I was like, colours are so bright. And I was like, what watercolours is she using? The colours are so saturated. And you don't think of art when you think of the Bronte sisters in the way of, you know, like drawing and painting. So these stood out to me when I first started working here. And in the close period when we got to go through all their artwork, I was just like, wow, this is so cool.
The Bronte family, they're like the first multimedia artists.
Yeah.
They can literally do everything. I'm like, stop it, please. You're so talented. But you're right. I think people don't initially think of them as artists. But you look at these and they're absolutely gorgeous. I'd love to have them in my house.
Yeah. And they don't look that old, to be honest, do they? They
look really modern.
They could be a really contemporary piece of artwork. And obviously, we have them in the shop. Yeah. And they still work so well on products and things. It's almost like they were designed for it.
Yeah.
I mean, I wonder what Charlotte would think of it being on a tote bag and a tea towel. I would hope she'd be quite pleased about it, actually.
I think she'd love it. Bramwell, on the other hand, he'd be like...
Might be a bit gel.
Yeah, he'd be so jealous. Something really interesting I love about these is the vivid colours.
Yeah.
Right? They're so beautiful.
Like the quality of them are so, just so strong.
Something about the wild roses, which is really interesting. I was reading about how it was found. So the person who owned it already had a painting.
Yeah.
But this one was stuck to the back of it for such a long time. That's why the colours are so fresh.
Oh, because it hasn't been exposed to any light. Or, that's so cool.
Isn't that so interesting? So I think that was 1984 that was found.
That's not long ago. Imagine finding that. Everyone dreams of finding a Bronte artifact. Imagine finding that.
You talk about you being an artist.
Yeah.
What do you create?
I do sort of landscape paintings as well, but they're more sort of urban settings. I usually paint like sunsets and sunrises and things like that, but more in an urban setting, so with like streets and cars. I really like Charlotte's like natural paintings. And I think that as an artist there's so much to be inspired by just working here, and like you're constantly getting ideas for new things. And my postcards are in the shop now, and
go buy them.
And just like working here and being inspired by all the literature and their physical artwork, it's just extremely inspiring.
Yeah, definitely.
What is it that draws you to painting the skies and sunsets? Is it, is there a particular reason you like to paint them, or do you just find it very therapeutic?
I think it's like growing up, I've always taken loads of photos of the sky. I was known in school by like, oh, she takes pictures of the sunset and that's all she posts and on Instagram and things like that. And then I got into art like through GCSE and things like that. But because studying art, it made me really stressed and anxious. So then I started associating my artwork with being anxious. And I really needed to break those bad habits. And so I just went back to sort of the things that I knew. And I had so many reference photos. So like all the paintings that I paint are from references that I've taken. And I just wanted art to not be something that I was anxious about. So that's sort of the thing that drew me to going back and painting landscapes and sunsets and the sky and things like that.
I think there's a really nice affinity there between your work and the Brontes, because they always drew from reference images. The majority of the things that we have are things that they're like paintings or illustrations are from books that they've copied out of. Or even so interesting about the wild rose watercolour is that it says it's from nature. But actually, I think there's been research done by Christine Alexander that it's most likely to be from books. So there was lots of books at the time, like Patrick Syme's Practical Directions for Learning Flower Drawing, which was like 1810, which I think they would have had copies of or they would have seen. So something I like about Bronte's work is they're really particular about copying from references, but they also build in their own little quirky changes and differences.
Something which is quite interesting with Charlotte in particular is she tended to stylize things quite a bit, even when you look at the portraits that she does of people. I wouldn't say it was cartoony, but it was almost slightly surreal way of doing it. Like if you look at the sketch she did even of Anne, not necessarily ones from the ones that she's copied, but the ones of Anne, where she's kind of almost elongated everything and everything's very elegant and you know, it's so interesting to see that. And I think she did do that with the ones that she copied, because there's, I can't remember which one it is, there's one of a portrait of a woman and it's copied from a book, but when you put them side by side you realize how much she stylized them. So it's quite interesting even looking at these one. I mean, they have a style of their own. Mm-hmm. And especially the
blue convolvulus. The blue convolvulus.
Convolvulus. Yeah, the blue convolvulus.
Listeners at home, try and say it, because I'm struggling.
I'm just not going to bring that one up again. But that one, it's got like quite a stylized look about it as well. It stands out for me from the other two.
Yeah, I think like the contrasting colours especially, like the blue and the green, the pink and the green, and the purple and the green. Mm. She's definitely added her own style into it.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of other watercolours in the collection.
Yeah.
That we got to see during the collection period. Mm. Some of them are so bright and colourful. There's like blues and oranges and reds. And I'm just like, these are so different to what you expect. Yeah. I don't know, like they're not dull or grey or, you know, like how people think about Howarth.
Yeah. This is actually a really good place to play Four Truths and a Lie. So this is the part of the podcast where I've got five facts up my sleeve. Yeah. Four of them are truths, one of them's a lie. Mm. And you've got to figure out which one that is. Sam also doesn't know. And also at home, have a little guess. And the reason I thought that was a perfect place to play it is that I've got the names of colours that Charlotte Bronte had in her art box. Ooh. You got to guess which one isn't correct.
Okay.
Number one, Prussian blue. Number two, pond. Number three, sap green. Four, yellow ochre. Five, vermilion. Which one do you think is not a colour in Charlotte Bronte's art box?
See, I know that most of them are paint colours. Yeah. So yellow ochre, Prussian blue, vermilion's also.
Yeah.
What was the...
The other two is pond or sap green.
Well, those are interesting. Pond?
Pond, that's quite...
That's quite a vague...
Yeah.
Because you can't... Is it like a green,
it depends
a blue?
What kind of pond
it
is.
Like what if it's like a
dirty
pond? Yeah. Like brown.
Yeah, is it brown? Yeah. Like brownie green? Which one do you think's wrong?
See, that's the issue. I think that the one that we think is going to be wrong is going to be the right one. So I feel like sap green.
Sap green. Like
You're going for sap green?
Bing. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay, I'll go for pond, okay. And we'll see.
And I'll go for sap green. Yeah.
Well, Ramla, you should have backed yourself because the wrong one is pond.
Oh, I knew it.
I actually just changed it because the actual colour in her box is lake.
Oh, cool. That's nice.
I know, it's nice, right? But again, like,
what does that mean?
Yeah,
what does that mean?
But so lake was in there, along with... one called Van Brown. And I tried to search it. And all that came up was brown vans. Like, no like colour examples. So that one was
interesting.
Weird. But I love the idea of the colour lake.
Uh-huh.
Lovely, right?
Yeah.
And what was a van back then?
I don't know. Well, I literally tried to find, I spent ages searching it and I couldn't find Van Brown. If you
Maybe
at
made
home,
something else back then.
If you paint with Van Brown, please, can you like send us send it in or something? But no, what I thought that list did really well is demonstrate the vibrancy of the colours that she used.
And also like, I use those colours still today.
Mm. Right.
And it's just, it's like, you know, it's constant. Like they use the same colours that we did, and they painted their pictures and we're painting our pictures, and it's like, you know, we're doing the same things that they did, and it's like something like a part of human experience that continues over you know, the last 200 years.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Did you paint and like illustrate when you were a child?
Yeah, so I did a lot of I had like a lot of sketchbooks. I have a lot of bad drawings. I had like sketchbooks filled with like, I used to like Doctor Who and like Hunger Games and things like that. And and I did like drawings of like characters from the films and the TV series and things like that. It's a bit embarrassing.
It's not embarrassing. I'm just going to say shout out Doctor Who. Yeah. Are you excited for the new season?
Yes.
So excited. Bring back Ross T. Davis. Love it.
And also we do need a Bronte Doctor Who episode.
We're waiting for it.
Why hasn't it happened yet?
Yep. Russell T. Davies, if you're listening, please contact the Parsonage.
It needs to happen.
Yeah.
Two good stories. A, I've met Russell T. Davies.
Oh my god.
I used to work at the Lowry Theatre Bar.
Yeah.
And he came up on for like, it was like a press night for a play. Mm-hmm. And he like ordered a pint of Diet Coke. And I was like, and I heard all the people at the bar. I was like, oh my god, it's Russell T. Davies. I was like, I need to say something. And I was like, I'm serving him this drink. And then I was like freaking out. I was like, I just need to be calm. So I just said, hi, are you Russell T. Davies? And I just wanted to say thank you, because Doctor Who was a big part of my life.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't be where I am without mm-hmm. it. Part two of this story. So when I was like cleaning out my like bedroom when I was moving to uni, mm-hmm. and I did like drama and theater and writing when I was at uni, I found one of my first plays.
Yeah.
And it was me, it was like a play, it's like a Doctor Who play.
Oh my gosh.
And it's when Martha just started. Uh-huh. And so it was like their first adventure together, and they came to Norwich, where I'm from. It's actually a sick story. Sorry, you know, there was a band called Automatic. And they sang, what's that coming over?
Oh, yeah.
Is it a monster? So the idea was that the band, because they're called Automatic, yeah. everything that they sang automatically happened. And we have a massive hill in Norwich called Mousehold Heath. So they did a gig on top of Mousehold Heath singing that song. Oh, and then like God. A giant monster came. And me and my brother had to like help the doctor save the day.
Oh, that's so that cool. Cool.
It was one of my first arty uh-huh. sort of things.
Yeah.
And so I'm glad that Doctor Who was one of your
inspiring artists.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's true.
Just like the Bronte.
Just like the
Bronte. That crossover episode does need to happen.
Yeah. I would harass.
Should we write Russell it? Should we just write it?
I've commented on his Instagram post.
Have you?
And he's like liked the comments, but it's also like, come on.
We're just going to keep pushing. We need to come up with a hashtag.
Because it is Bradford City of Culture 2025. Yeah. Like, imagine like that sort of
crossover.
That would be like insane.
We've got enough creative people at the Parsonage to be able to do it. Like, you can do the storyboards.
Yeah.
I could write it. Yeah. I've done script writing. I'm sure there's other people here who
like, Sam could help direct it.
Wow. Yeah. Well, thanks.
You could do that.
We've
but
got
it's
this.
Also like, if you need to do research, we're all here. We're all willing to help you research.
Come to the library. Uh-huh. Be on the podcast.
And we can find the gap in the Bronte story where we could fit in some alien activity.
Aliens, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's really easy to be able to do that.
There is, especially with Emily.
Because they've done an episode with Shakespeare.
Yeah.
They've done a Charles Dickens episode. Mm-hmm. Well, it's time for female writer.
Yes. Yes.
Female writers.
Come on.
And aliens.
We're gonna make this happen. Mm-hmm.
And with this new season and the new Doctor, it could be so iconic.
It would be iconic. Mm-hmm. Okay, we'll bank it. We're going to make it happen. By the time you hear this, we'll have written it and it'll be ready to go. One of the reasons I asked you about drawing as a child is because actually like all of the Brontes drew as children. I think the first example of illustrations by Charlotte that we have are these like tiny little ones. It was in one of the first manuscripts. And it was a story that they wrote for Anne when she was really ill, I think. Mm-hmm. And it's like a little bedtime tale. And the illustrations, they're so cute. They're like, it's like little boats. And there's a little house and little stick people going. But it shows you from an early age that they were really creative and they were cultivating. They were working on this together. They were doing it between themselves and kind of bringing this creativity alive in the family and the starting of it. So I think their drawings and their illustrations, their artwork is really entwined with their writing, right?
Yeah, I think so as well.
Also, I found out that Charlotte Bronte was asked to illustrate the second edition of Jane Eyre.
Really?
Yeah, her publishers asked her to illustrate the second edition in 1848.
Wow. Did she didn't? No.
I don't think so.
Oh. I mean, that would have been really interesting.
Or like seeing like the preliminary sketches. Yeah, or something like that.
And how she was envisioning it.
Yeah, and how she saw Rochester.
Yeah. Yeah, that would have been really
be so
cool.
interesting. Yeah.
But it maybe would have taken away our own versions. That's something I like about reading. Yeah. You know what I mean? Where you can picture them for yourself. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's really interesting thinking about how artwork embeds itself in actually the novels that they write.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the protagonists create art, do art.
Yeah.
In Jaina, doesn't Jaina sit down and
she
draw
does
herself?
Draw, yeah. And also Helen Huntington in The Tenant of Wildfell Hall, she's a painter.
Mm. Yeah, and she sells flower drawings.
Yeah, and that's how she gains her independence, so she's able to provide for herself because she's selling her own paintings. Mm. I think that's so interesting as well.
Mm. Yeah, and there's something interesting there about like the female connection to artwork at the time, because if Charlotte was copying these sorts of flowers from books, is those sorts of books like the Practical Directions of Learning Flower Drawing, mm-hmm. they're actually like male dominated. All of those books that were being produced they're done by men, they're illustrated by men, they're drawn by men, mm-hmm. so actually them themselves taking upon themselves, stylizing them, changing them, that's very strong. But getting the characters in their books
to do the artists, same,
right? That's mm-hmm. really exciting. Mm-hmm. I love the bit in Jaina where she's drawing herself. I think it's art is a really reflective practice.
Yeah.
And I feel like in that moment in the novel, she's really looking inside of herself and thinking about her as a person. And you can put a lot of yourself into your artwork.
Yeah, and I think like the experiences of art. So like in Jaina, she says how she's not completely happy with her drawings because she can't get onto paper what she sees in her mind. Like it's not exact. And I think that's such a, like a universal artist experience to go through. And I think it's so interesting how experiences like that last over time, and we find ways to relate to the characters and relate to the novels 200 years later.
It's really brilliant,
and it's interesting as well how they very much were pushing for making a living from creativity, not only with writing but obviously with the artwork, like in Tenant of Wildfell Hall. And I believe Charlotte tried to make a living from her artwork at one point. I think she's trying to find anything to get her out of, of working as a governess. But it seems quite, a contemporary move to be trying to make a living from creativity.
And it's like them saying that creativity is freedom.
Mm. Yeah,
I think that's a lasting sort of message to take from them.
That's lovely.
Definitely.
We were just talking then about like kind of bringing their work to like contemporary society and what it speaks to them now. Uh-huh. And you did a fantastic talk all about that thing. So I wondered whether you wanted to like talk to the viewers at home.
As you were discussing how it relates to, you know, contemporary artists and how they continue to inspire, I think it's interesting because Taylor Swift does have a lot of literary references in her music.
Yeah.
And her song Invisible String is a direct reference from Jane Eyre and, you know, the quote of Jane Eyre and Rochester, there being an invisible string tying them together. Mm. And also Mad Woman being, you know, an illustration of the Mad Woman archetype in a lot of Victorian literature, and how that relates to Bertha and how we see Bertha in Jane Eyre. A lot of her songs are based off of literature, and you can see the literary references throughout her music. And it's just so interesting to see how the Brontes and other female writers and other, you know, just in general Victorian literature continues to inspire like new creativity and new art. And, you know, Taylor Swift being the biggest female artist of basically all time, and her referencing the Brontes in this way is just it's so interesting, and it's so cool, and I think a lot of us at the Parsonage can appreciate that. And I just love telling people you know, like, this is a reference from Jane Eyre. And she also has a song called Dear Reader, and that's something Charlotte Bronte popularized because she did in Jane Eyre. Dear Reader, she's talking to her audience. And also, at the time that we're recording, Taylor Swift just released Speak Now, Taylor's version, which is her reclaiming of her music. But in sort of the address that she gives to her audience, she does refer to us as Dear Reader in the last sentence of this, you know, her talking about her reclaiming her music. And she talks to us like Charlotte Bronte talks to her audience as well. And I just think it's so interesting and so magical. And it's like an invisible string that ties women of all times and of all sort of artistry together. Mm. And, you know, if Taylor Swift wasn't a songwriter, she'd be a poet or she'd be a novelist or she'd be something like that.
Yeah.
I think it's, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if you can tell, but we've got lots of Swifties here at the party. Yeah. And everyone's going to go see her on her new tour.
Yeah, it's exciting.
But she should come to the Parsonage. When's that going to happen?
Definitely.
Yeah, but we've got a lot of demands being made in this episode. Yeah.
We don't ask much, just a Doctor Who episode and Taylor Swift. Yeah. That's all we want. But yeah, it is interesting to seeing how the Brontes still kind of inspire a lot of art, and whether it's in film or music or novels, they continue to, you know, haunt everyone, don't they?
Yeah. So. Mm-hmm.
It's time for our favourite part of the pod, the creative interpretation. Each week, our guest will have responded to their object through some artistic form. So what have you got for us today, Ramla?
I wrote a little poem. Yeah, sort of explain my thought process afterwards.
Yeah, yeah.
And just like my paintings, I believe I am too much. Some parts overworked, some not so developed at all. Some hues dull and dark and miserable, some too bright and colourful. Any critic would look at me and wince. Perhaps this shouldn't be the one that we have on display. There are better ones, surely. The countless layers intricately woven together like the brushstrokes that put me together. There were too many, too rushed, too much. Art, just like me, is subjective. For I am gazed upon, consumed, spat out and consumed again. To be analysed and judged as worthy, as beautiful, as interesting, as meaningful. Meaningful, as outspoken, as expressive. I am all these things all at once, but also nothing at all. And just like my paintings, I believe I am too much, but also not enough.
Brilliant.
That's amazing.
Thank you.
It's just like a poem of exploring sort of being a woman and being in the creative space and taking up space and also feeling like maybe you're doing too much, but also feeling like you're not doing enough. But yeah, I think that's maybe an experience that, you know, the sisters experienced as well, because they were taking up space being female authors in a space that a lot of men wouldn't have want them in. And I think it's important that we do take up space and we do, you know, we push ourselves and we force ourselves into these spaces, even if we're not welcome. And I think the sisters knew that if they wrote under their female names and therefore writing under pseudonyms, that, you know, women weren't welcome and they would be judged harshly because they were women. So they, you know, took the decision to have their work properly appreciated as if, you know, without any of the tainting of like patriarchy. I think that's still an experience that women experience as well.
Reflecting on like right now, as a contemporary artist, how do you think those structures, have they changed over time? Do you still feel them?
I feel like I did experience a lot of it growing up, just because I'm a Muslim woman, I'm a brown woman, and I think at like university and things, I did feel like I didn't fit in because it was like majority white male spaces and feeling sort of uncomfortable in using my voice. But then I sort of had to just let it go, force myself out of that mindset. And obviously, these men still said ridiculous things. But I had to let myself fight back, take up space, have my opinion heard, have my artwork seen, and if it meant causing chaos, then I would do so.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad that you take up space, because the artwork that we have in the shop is absolutely beautiful.
Thank you.
So anyone that comes, please feel free. Is it online as well?
Yeah.
Fantastic. Do you want to describe what the postcards look like?
Oh, so I have two postcards. One is of a path walking up to the parsonage, and it has some quotes from the sisters about nature. And then I have a painting postcard of the inside of the parsonage, of the iconic window, with light streaming through it. And I have quotes relating to that on that one as well. Hopefully we should be getting a new postcard of the front of the parsonage. And yeah, it's more my style that I've been developing recently with like clouds and things. I sort of imagined what the house would have looked like on a nice sunny day with clouds in the sky, and you know, it being colourful and not what people usually think of when they think of the parsonage, like dark and dreary. And I think it's a little bit of a, you know, misconception that, you know, the house is dark and gloomy and things like that.
Yeah.
I think there were days that it looked pretty, and I sort of reimagined that in the new artwork.
Yeah.
I've had a sneak peek of it and it looks very good.
Thank you.
I cannot wait. I'm going to get it and it's going to go with the others.
Yeah.
So imagine in 100 years time, there's going to be a museum that opens in dedication to you.
Oh.
So what would be the one item in the collection that you feel represents you best?
That's interesting. I do have a memory box. So I have a memory box and it's filled with like pictures with friends, like Polaroids, and I like keep film tickets and train tickets and things like that.
Nice.
And I think that memory box is very indicative of all the things that I like hold dear to me. So like memories and times with friends and movies that I've watched and things like that. And I'm a really bad like hoarder with like things relating to memories.
Same.
So I feel like if there was a museum dedicated to me, it would be overflowing with things.
That's good though.
It's because I imagine it as like I'm keeping these things for the future, and like I want my future kids or anyone that is related to me to remember me. And I think that's why I keep all my artwork. I have so many sketchbooks from when I was little, and I could easily just bin them all, but it's like, no, I don't want to. It just, I feel like it shows the evolution of me and my personality. And my memory box is, I got it for my birthday 2 years ago from my best friend. And it's like, oh, she knows me so well because she knows I keep all these things. And she's like, you need a place to put these things. And the things that I keep in there, I think that would be interesting to look at.
It's a great choice.
In 100 years.
And I think it's interesting as well, going back to the sketchbooks and why I think it's important to keep them, because even though at the time you might think, oh, this is really rubbish, I don't know why, but actually they're kind of like diaries in a way, because you can see where your mind was at a certain time.
Definitely.
And it's always great to see the progression of your talent as well, and you kind of look back and you think, oh wow, look how far, like I can draw hands back then.
I still can't draw hands.
I can draw them slightly better than I used to be able to, so it's kind of always I think it's very important to keep those kind of items.
And it's also like the things that I was interested in back then as well. Not a lot has changed. I still like Doctor Who, and I still like the Hunger Games, and I still like books and reading. Like there's some pages in my sketchbook where I used to copy like my favorite books. I used to just draw the covers of my favorite books.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's interesting.
Definitely.
Well, I'm glad that the Taylor Swift tickets will be joining your memory box
too.
Well, Ramla, that's absolutely brilliant. Thank you so much for coming to the podcast.
Thank you.
And we'll see you soon.
Thank you. Bye.
Oh, that was so brilliant to have Ramla on.
It was brilliant.
I love bringing our visitor experience stuff in, because it's nice to kind of get an insight into the people who work here.
Absolutely. And as I said, we just love nerding out about
everything.
We love geeking out about anything Bronte. As soon as someone brings up something about the Brontes, everyone's on it. And they're like, oh, what do you think about this? What do you think about that?
Yeah.
So it's always great.
What do you think the Brontes would have thought of that episode?
I think they would have loved it. I think Charlotte would have definitely loved it, that we're kind of shedding some light on her artwork. I think people are sometimes quite surprised. I mean, I find in the shop sometimes, if we sell the postcards, I say, oh, this is Charlotte Bronte's. And they say, oh, what? She painted this. And I was like, yeah, it's hers. So I think it is. I think it's really special to explore these items a bit more.
Yeah, and I love what Ramla said about kind of that invisible thread drawing kind of artists of any kind, whether they're writers, illustrators, watercolors, theatre makers, all of those like different types of art kind of through to nowadays, you can kind of link it back to the Brontes and be inspired by them.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for listening today. You can catch us at Bronte Parsonage Museum on Instagram and Twitter. You can catch all the images of our guests that we've had on today and also the object that we've been talking about. Thank you to Cassie White for our music and thank you to Sam for our logo.
And a little nod to Harold Mitchell, who designed the original sign, which that logo is inspired by.
Give us a like and a subscribe, and we look forward to welcoming you next week. The museum is open Wednesday to Sunday from 10 a.m. till 5 p.m. Hopefully see you in Haworth soon. Bye.
Bye.